The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
Thanks for being with us. Good Tuesday. Brad Edwards, ESPN BCS guru, joins us. The stretch run of the regular season in college football. Always good to catch up with one of the best in the country. Brad Edwards joins us on the show. Brad Sesmat with you. Sports360AZ.com. Things that are going on in Arizona and things like the BCS that impact the Fiesta Bowl. Of course, we'll talk with Brad Edwards about that. News and notes, AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. She joins us typically on Mondays. We were off yesterday for the Veterans Day holiday, and we'll visit with Paula Bovin about the ASU win over Utah, the Suns 5-2 start, the Cardinals going over 500 with their win over against Houston. A lot to get to with Paula Bovin. News and notes. Hope you had a good extended weekend. Senior Executive Vice President of Everything Eric Sorensen was in Salt Lake City. I saw on Twitter where you're a fan of that city now, that the Utes fans treated ASU fans with a lot of respect.
Always been a fan of Salt Lake City. But yeah, I've never seen a football game up there. I've been up there for March Madness about 10 years ago. But nice, quaint little Rice-Eccles Stadium. Mm-hmm. Only holds about 46,000 people. But it's a great city. Nice press box. Everything's good.
Did you put out great work, great content on Sports360AZ.
Oh, always. Yeah, that's always. We go on all the road trips.
That's all I care about. Just want to see the video and all the reaction and all the stuff.
And we're lucky because most of the Pac-12 sites, most of the places that we travel with to the other Pac-12 venues are great. I've never been to Pullman. I've heard stories.
Yeah, sure.
But when you're talking about Los Angeles, Salt Lake City, Seattle.
Beats working.
Eugene. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I'm heading over to Pasadena for the ASU-UCLA game. We're going to do the show from UCLA next week, thanks to our friends at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it's all about you. They're a big part of what we do. I did the double on Sunday. I went to the Cardinals game and then the Suns game. Actually, I had a chance to chat with Jeff Hornacek about, hey, you guys are screwing this whole thing up. You're supposed to be awful. You're supposed to, you know, lose games. Andrew Wiggins, cover of Sports Illustrated. Instead, you're 5-2. So we'll hear from Jeff Hornacek a little bit later on in the show, and I spoke with him about why you're screwing this up, what's concerning him, what does he like about his team, and the whole notion of tanking. The Cardinals game was terrific. Houston's not very good. The Cardinals are getting better and better. They are a playoff team as we speak, not in the literal terms, but in my view, they're a team that is going to be in the playoff conversation. The biggest egg in the world to be laid would be losing at Jacksonville this coming Sunday. It just can't happen, okay? I know that every NFL team and all, you can lose on any given Sunday and all that stuff. But I like what they're doing out there. I do like it. There aren't parts of the game that I look at and say, wow, their running game is really, really good. No, it's not. They're coached better than they were under Ken Whisenhunt and his staff. They make adjustments better than Ken Whisenhunt and his staff did. It's not all just Carson Palmer. There's better personnel out on the football field at a lot of positions. So Rod Graves finally was let go, and we're seeing the fruits of Steve Keim pay off. If you were to look at Steve Keim's moves of guys like John Abraham and drafting Tyrann Mathieu, those are the easy ones. And so later on in the show, I'm going to talk about some of the other moves that the Cardinals have made that have put them in this position. You have to give them some credit. Even those of you that hate the Cardinals, just hate them. Oh, you're too nice to them. No, I think I've been pretty fair through the years. I'm not one of these bitter Cardinal guys that just rips on them for whatever they do and refer to them as in the White Tower and all that stuff, because those people are around. You know, life's too short for that stuff. Anyways, our Facebook question of the day, Eric Sorensen gets us off and running with Facebook question of the day.
Easy one today, Brad.
Yeah.
Bigger surprise to this point of their season, 5-4 Cardinals, 5-2 Suns.
That's it? That's all you got for me today after a long weekend? Bigger surprise?
Bigger surprise.
It's not bad. Head over to Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.com, like our page, share your input. What are people saying so far on this?
It's pretty much the majority towards the Suns. But yeah. I kind of think it's the Cardinals because the Cardinals, people forget, the Cardinals had really low expectations to start the year too. Probably not as low as the Suns.
Right.
But nobody knew how Carson Palmer was going to turn out. Nobody knew how Arians and his staff would adjust to the players on the roster. And at this point last year, going into week 11, the Cardinals were playing for absolutely positively nothing.
It was interesting Sunday night at the Suns game. I had some Suns people that pulled me aside. They heard my questioning with Hornacek, and they pulled me aside and said, you know, we don't know if this is going to continue like this. Well, yeah, I know. I get that. They're not on pace to win 55 games. I understand that. I'm not overstating this. I'm not getting all caught up in the hoopla. 5-2 is a very nice start.
Product is fun to watch. That is the most important thing.
Airs
if you're going to lose, be entertaining. Yes. Last year they lost, and guess what? It was the opposite of entertaining basketball.
They were old. The Cardinals are entertaining to watch.
No doubt.
Cardinals
great defense.
Yeah. Even though a guy like Andre Roberts isn't very much part of the offense anymore and the running game's not doing a whole lot, you know, for the last 3 years, all I've heard about is Rob Hausler is going to be the greatest thing ever. Rob Hausler is going to be. And Rob Hausler has been awful. And Rob Hausler finally did something. He finally did a few things on Sunday. Let's get you caught up on the things, some of the things going on in the world of sports on My Mind, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Off and running to another week. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. You know, they're already getting ready for their New Year's Eve bash and celebration. You're making your plans for New Year's Eve. The Honda Resort and Casino is the place for you. Don't forget to check out all the information at Honda.com. Who wouldn't want to be at New Year's Eve at the Honda Resort and Casino? Great food, play the games, pull down those slots, have some fun, watch some sports. It's all at the Honda Resort and Casino, Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. The Cardinals beating Houston makes them 5-4 on the season. And they have Jacksonville this week. They should be 6-4. We said at the start of the year, if you get around 9 victories, you're probably going to be a playoff team in the NFC. What we didn't think would happen is that the NFC East would be the NFC least, that it would be so bad. Cowboys getting absolutely destroyed over the weekend by New Orleans. The Eagles are sitting there at 5-5. I don't think Philadelphia's any great shakes. If you look at just some of the tiebreakers so far, the Cardinals beat Carolina. The Cardinals beat Detroit. You have to start to factor those things in as you go down the stretch. It's going to be pretty jumbled down the end of the road. Carolina did the Cardinals an immense favor on Sunday by winning at San Francisco. And so here they are, the Cardinals, my Cardinals. They were able, Bruce Arians was able to get some key contributions in Sunday's victory.
I think a couple performances that were outstanding were John Abraham, Justin Bethel, another guy that had a great game. He only played 16 snaps, but Dan Williams was extremely productive in those 16. And thought our offensive line played their best game this year.
So it's pretty easy to talk about the Cardinals and say Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald, Carson Palmer, Darnell Dockett, Calais Campbell, Darryl Washington. It's pretty easy to talk about the stars. Problem has been through the last few years, there haven't been any other players to talk about. And so when they get contributions out of some people that you're not necessarily thinking about, like Justin Bethel this year has played like a Pro Bowl type of player on special teams. Bruce Arians singles out Dan Williams. Dan Williams went through the tragic loss of his father, was away from the game, has come back, is able to do some things in the middle of the defensive front, clog it up, be a difference maker. John Abraham's been terrific. It's a couple of old guys that are helping them out here. Well, not just a couple, there's quite a few guys, vets. Darryl Washington, the Cardinals in a close game, but they changed their mindset in the second half.
Well, I mean, as a defense, we just told ourselves, man, 17 is the max. You know, no more points to be scored. You know, that's play nasty, play dirty. Let's go out them in a good way. Let's go out there and play some ball, man, and get some pressure on Keenum. I thought he had a lot of time in the first half, patting the ball back there, and DBs couldn't cover quick enough. So we was able to come out second half and play our game of football.
It's Darryl Washington there. So the very first defensive play, you're talking about John Abraham and Shaughnessy. You're not talking about guys that are front-line, big-name guys, at least the start of the season. Give me a better veteran linebacker pickup this season who's been able to do more things for his team than John Abraham, probably off the field as well. I don't know. I'm not there with him, but the word was on John Abraham, good guy to have on your team. You know, you watch the Patrick Peterson against Andre Johnson matchup on Sunday. That's what we all want to see in sports. We all want to see greatness against greatness. That was fun. Andre Johnson made some amazing plays. Patrick Peterson is on Andre Johnson. That's Frazier Ali type of stuff. We want to see that. Tyrann Mathieu's still out there making plays as the season has progressed. So I like where they are. I think you look at their schedule. Is Seattle still the dominant team that we've seen up in Seattle? Or is it just, you know, last year when it was 58-zip, we just saw a different club? This year, have the Seahawks been as dominant up there? I think the answer would be probably not. Is San Francisco a team that has some warts? The answer to that is yes. The Cardinals get them down here. Now, within the division, the Cardinals have not done a good job to this point. All they can do is keep going out and playing games, stating the obvious, but they are taking care of their own business. The cries of getting rid of Carson Palmer 3-4 weeks ago have suddenly subsided. Doesn't mean my opinion hasn't changed that they need to go find a young quarterback next offseason. They do. There's a story, the whole Ben Roethlisberger thing on Sunday morning. It's an NFL.com report that says he may. The key word is may, not is, not going to. He may. I may decide to turn right out of work today, but I might go left. I don't know. And so, of course, Ben Roethlisberger is going to say, I'm dumbest thing ever. I'm not. What's the cap implication? There's the whole business side on Ben Roethlisberger. There are these Cardinal fans sending me notes. Are the Cardinals going after Big Ben? Because there's a report. Yeah, there's reports all over the place. And it just happened to come from, I don't know, a site that probably is probably a little tired of doing Richie Incognito in Locker Room and on a day when Jay Glazer has a huge scoop. So I look at that too. We're going to hear from Jeff Hornacek later in the show. Also, Jay Glazer on the Incognito voicemail. Todd Graham, Will Sutton, and others. But up next, we switch gears on the college football scene in our great state. The Fiesta Bowl, where is it lying now? And for you fans that are into college football, the BCS, if you're an Ohio State fan, you're still hosed. You still are. Brad Edwards, ESPN BCS guru, joins me next. Monday through Friday, I'm Brad Sussmat. We join you right here on Sports360AZ.com and White Mountain Radio. This segment of the Brad Sussmat Show brought to you by Simply Sell It Now. Simply Sell It Now sells people's cars, trucks, motorcycles, RVs, and boats. Let them sell your vehicle. No upfront cost, no hassle. Simply Sell It Now handles all the details. Go to their website, simplysellitnow.com. That's simplysellitnow.com. We welcome Brad Edwards, now ESPN BCS guru, to the show for a couple of minutes. We saw Dr. Shelton a couple of weeks ago, and he was wringing his hands and talking about the interesting matchups that they could have. Brad, are we into the Baylor-Fresno State mode? What are your thoughts on what Shelton and company out here at the Fiesta Bowl are looking at off the top?
Yeah, unfortunately for this year, and you know, it's always one of those things that's got a decent chance of happening whenever you have the last pick, is that you're probably going to get one team that, you know, that the locals aren't going to be crazy about. You know, certainly not a team that they would follow on a regular basis, I guess is maybe a kinder way of saying it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it looks like UCF is going to win the old Big East Conference, and they will, they'll be in the BCS somewhere. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, does a non-AQ team, Fresno State or Northern Illinois, also qualify? And depending on whether they do, I think that'll dictate so where you end up as far as the last team. But I think it's more than likely it's either going to be UCF or it's going to be Fresno or Northern Illinois going up against the Big 12 team.
And what do you see in terms of the deciding factor on the Fresno, Northern Illinois, UCF side? Who has the advantage there?
Well, as far as you know, as far as who ends up falling to the Fiesta, I think that I think that the Sugar would take UCF over Fresno or Northern Illinois with the previous pick. You know, UCF being in Florida, not that far from New Orleans, it is a it's a team that has shown that it can be very competitive with good teams. Not only did it win at Louisville, but UCF won at Penn State. They lost by 3 to South Carolina. So I think the Sugar Bowl would feel comfortable taking them and feeling like they probably get a competitive game, or at least wouldn't be as worried about the potential blowout. So I think that's the direction the Sugar would go. You know, if there's only the choice between two teams. Now, as far as you know, the non-AQ, you know, right now Fresno is ahead of Northern Illinois in the BCS standings, but I actually give Northern Illinois a little bit of an edge. Mm. You know, starting this week, they have each of their final three games will be on ESPN2 on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night. So they're going to be playing, they're going to be playing on a stage where everyone's going to be able to see them, at least anyone who chooses to want to watch, unlike a Saturday where your games kind of get buried. And so I think if Northern Illinois does go undefeated, you know, they've got a chance to gain a lot more exposure here. And I also think their schedule in the end is going to be more difficult than Fresno's. And so I think they'll have an edge in the computer. So, you know, it could go either way. But right now I'd give a slight edge to Northern Illinois in the event that both of them end up undefeated.
Brad Edwards, ESPN BCS guru, with Brad Sussmat for a couple of minutes here on today's show. So Baylor, though, it's not a slam dunk. We watched them last week. They were okay against Oklahoma. I wouldn't say that they were overwhelming, but there's still the outside shot of them playing in the national title game. I think it's very slim. What's your view on Baylor?
You know, I think that Baylor is certainly fourth in the pecking order right now among those major undefeated teams. I would give them an outside chance to jump over Ohio State and finish. Well, finishing third wouldn't make any difference as far as the Fiesta Bowl goes. But in the event that Alabama or Florida State were to lose, you know, I would think there's a little bit of a chance Baylor could get in there. But you know, as far as going undefeated, I think there's one game left that Baylor has to worry about, and that's Oklahoma State in Stillwater. Mm. You know, I really can't see Texas Tech or Texas knocking off Baylor. Texas has to go to Waco, and so to me, it comes down to that game as to whether Baylor wins out, and then if they lose, I mean, depending on what Oklahoma State does this weekend. You know, if Oklahoma State wins the rest of their games, then you know, Baylor could be 11-1 and not be the Big 12 champ. It could be Oklahoma State. So, right now, I would say the odds are pretty good that you're going to get one of those two teams. I know Texas has not lost a conference game yet, and so they're clearly still in the mix. But my feeling is, if it's not Baylor, it'll probably be Oklahoma State winning the conference title.
And you know, the team that you look at away from the Fiesta Bowl, going through this whole process, and there's a lot of Ohio State Buckeye fans across our state and out here on the West Coast, they have no hope, right? I mean, and when I say that, they have to have Florida State or Alabama lose, obviously, but even then, is it a given that Ohio State would be the team that would go because their strength of schedule is so light?
Right, and that's the thing with Baylor. Baylor having a backloaded schedule, you know, with them playing most of their better opponents the last few weeks, I think Baylor's probably going to go past Ohio State in the computer part of it, and so really it comes down to whether Ohio State can hold a decent lead on Baylor in the polls to offset that. And I was actually quite surprised that Baylor is as close to Ohio State as they are in the coaches' poll, because I figured that of all the elements of the formula, the coaches' poll was the one where, you know, to them it's not necessarily just about this year. I think a lot of the coaches, you know, could easily look at the fact that Urban Meyer hasn't lost a game in 2 years at Ohio State,
right?
And the fact that, you know, if we get to the end of this thing, he'll be 25-0, and of all people, the coaches would put stock in that. And yet, you know, they're only 25 points up on Baylor in a poll that has 62 voters. So that tells you there are already a decent number of them that are voting Baylor ahead of OSU. And so, yeah, I would say that you know, Ohio State certainly has a better than 50-50 chance of finishing ahead of Baylor, but I would say their chances of either one of them, you know, finishing ahead of Alabama or Florida State without one of those two teams losing is, I'd say, in the 1% or 2% range.
Brad Edwards with us, ESPN. Before I let you go, so I'm getting a lot of questions about why not Baylor and Oregon in a matchup.
Yeah, and of course, that has everything to do with the selection order and the way that it works. You know, if Oregon is available as an at-large, the reality is they're just not going to slip all the way to the Fiesta. I mean, if the Fiesta had one of the early picks this year, then definitely they could make that happen. But there's a chance the way that it all, you know, sets up, that if a Fresno or Northern Illinois earns a spot in this thing, that the only bowl that might actually have any choice at all, at least as far as like a nice assortment of teams to choose from, would be the Orange Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's possible that, in fact, what I think is that the Orange is probably going to choose Oregon. You know, if Stanford wins out, Oregon's sitting there 11-1 and is not a conference champion. You know, they are, you know, they're an at-large candidate. I think that the, I think the Orange probably takes Oregon to play against Clemson. And after that pick is made, you know, theoretically, that could be the last of all the at-larges that are available. And so it could come to the Sugar where their only choice is, you know, UCF or non-AQ, and then whichever one they don't take falls to the Fiesta. So it's really just a matter of not having a setup right now where the bowls can, you know, negotiate and try to figure out what's the best matchup for everybody. There's a draft is basically what it is, and the Fiesta has the last pick right now, and that's where it sits. But you know what? Starting with the selection committee next year, it's gonna change a good bit, and that the committee not only is gonna decide which four teams are in the playoff, but they're also gonna decide which teams go to the other bowl games, and they're gonna decide on those matchups. And so hopefully, you know, once we get into that part of it a year from now, maybe more of the bowls will have good matchups than we get on an annual basis this year.
Sure. Before I let you go, I got about a minute. Arizona State. So I've got these ASU fans that are saying, hey, don't forget about us. We could run the table. We could go to the Pac-12 title game. We could beat Stanford across the field. Yeah, there's a lot of we could, we might, but where do you factor Arizona State in on any of this at this point?
Well, you know, at this point, with them having two losses, I mean, I would say a third loss takes them out of BCS at large contention. But if they don't lose a third time, you know, they went out, then obviously they win the Pac-12 and they're in the Rose Bowl. So, I mean, that's where you want to be. Mm-hmm. But if they don't win the conference, there's going to be a big bunch of teams in the Pac-12 sitting there with like 8 or 9 wins. And it's going to be, it's going to be up to the bowls to kind of sort them out and figure out, which bowls want which teams out of that group. And I don't know exactly where ASU is likely to fall, but there are probably 5 teams there that I can see, you know, any of them going to those bowls. And it's just a lot of it comes down to momentum. You know, how much momentum do they feel like you have? And I think a lot of that dictates how excited fans are to travel and buy tickets to games. And so, the better you close the season generally, the better a bowl you go to.
Sure, sure. And they've got to hold their breaths on that. Appreciate your time and insight as always, Brad. Thanks.
No problem. Take care, Brad.
ESPN BCS guru Brad Edwards. He joins us on the program. Appreciate ESPN's Brad Edwards on the show. On the other side, Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Man, the Fiesta Bowl, if it's Fresno State, I know, Eric, you're not big on that, but how many of them would come down like 5 days early, golf, drink our wine, chase our women, pillage the community? I don't know. It's Fresno, right?
We don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think they would travel well. Fresno State's never been to a BCS game.
Yeah.
The first time is always the sweetest.
But what is traveling well out of Fresno?
That's good.
What's the definition? All right. Paula's on the other side. We hear from Jeff Horn a second later on in the show, too. I caught up with him earlier. I'm Brad Slissman.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmat.
News and Notes, Paula Bovin, AZ Central sports columnist. So ASU basketball plays tonight at home against Miami of Ohio, or you have Kansas and Duke tonight where you can watch Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker, the top two players in next year's draft, although Jeff Hornacek doesn't seem to get it. He's winning too much. And there's no reason to watch Wiggins and Parker because the Suns are 5-2. Are you surprised?
Yes, I'm very surprised. I had absolutely no idea what the Suns would put on the floor, but I didn't expect this. And I'm very impressed. And I know people are saying they need to start tanking games. I don't think that's the makeup of anybody on that floor or coaching that team. So very surprised.
Within the organization, I was there on Sunday night, there is this, boy, did we luck out getting Hornacek, and boy, did we luck out getting this group of players. There's not any bad guys, and I think the organization, from all the mistakes and errors and past misjudgments, it felt to me like they're on, and it's one night and having people come up wanting to let you know what's going on. that they actually are starting to get it a little bit down there. Are you sensing that too?
Definitely. And, you know, people can say luck out, but I also think that's a group of people that learned from their mistakes a little bit. And that was a really smart move to hire Hornacek. You can look at it any way you want it, but they made that decision. And maybe the timing was great and everything else. But, yeah, I mean, such a terrific hire. And, you know, they had to see something in some of these guys that they either, A, drafted or, B, brought in from free agency. I mean, that, you know, you can call that luck or you can call that, you know, an administration that's sort of figuring out how to do it right now with the right people in place to do it.
You know, Paul, when you walk into a Suns arena and you take out the owner, who I've had up and down times with, you have as well.
Sure.
And you take the president out of the way, who I don't think has done very much to help out here. There's something like the old shoe or old pair of jeans that you put on when you go to a Suns game, practice, event, unlike any of the other teams in town. Do you know what I mean by that?
Oh, I do. And I think a lot of it has to do with their history in this community. There's generations of Suns fans in this town, kind of passed on down, you know, and you really don't see that with the other pro sports here. So I think it's unique in that this is, town wants to support the Suns so badly and will always consider itself a Suns town. I mean, this is their team. This team started here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't come from another city in Canada. I mean, this is where it started. So I think that history has a lot to do with what you're talking about.
And the Diamondbacks have been here too from the get-go, but there's just a different feel when I'm down there.
Well, and not as long. I mean, this has been around a lot longer. So,
ASU football, you were in Salt Lake City. Good teams find ways to win football games, or, man, were they lucky.
No, definitely A. I mean, you know, and I feel like every week when we talk, I say, you know, I've seen this ASU team for years, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is this is a game they would have lost in the past, and this is a team that a program that would struggle in the fourth quarter if they were behind to come back. And I thought that was a great win. And, you know, they won on the road against a team that at one point this season beat Stanford. I think that's what people more than anything have to remember. And I know Utah has its issues and everything else, but I was really impressed and, you know, kind of being there, you know, just to sort of see them in person, see the players afterwards, where their heads are at. This program seems to be in a really good place right now.
Do you sense anything around the program since Steve Patterson's departure last week that just feels a little off, or, no, it's just a guy that left?
The latter. I mean, I think, especially with players, I don't think they think twice about it. I don't think they believe they're impacted by it, and you know, it's all about wins and losses. Ultimately, I think that's how alumni and boosters feel as well. If the program is kind of keeping this momentum, you know, there was an initial reaction, oh, Patterson's leaving, and I don't even frankly hear people talking about it anymore.
Okay, on the field, Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports. The Richard Smith story. Here's a guy that wasn't good at the start of the year, right? I mean, he just wasn't, and I thought that he actually cost them at Stanford to be in that game from some of the boneheaded mistakes he made. Has come back, has been a really good story here the last couple of weeks. What are you seeing about the wide receiver opposite Jalen Strong spot?
I just think it's confidence. I just think that, and I think there's an important lesson here too. Whatever sort of ASU was doing during this time when he was struggling, and I haven't quite got a handle on it other than that I think there's been great support from his teammates and everything else. It worked, and I just think that, you know, especially at that age, at the college level, confidence means everything, and I think that's sort of what's happened right now.
Let's switch then over to the Rose Bowl, the bigger picture. It's 3 weeks away. You can't stub your toe and all that stuff. You could even lose to UCLA if you're Arizona State and still make it to the Pac-12 title game if USC were to beat UCLA, from my understanding.
Right.
So they have a lot of things going for them right now. Are they going to screw this thing up?
I don't think so. I mean, nothing has suggested to me in recent weeks that's the case. They're riding a pretty strong momentum wave right now. They have Oregon State at home. I don't think that's going to be any kind of an issue at all. You know, and then there's, you know, they've got UCLA and they've got Arizona, and I think that they're putting themselves in a pretty good position. Can they beat UCLA? Sure they can. I don't think I would guarantee it by any stretch. That game is on the road, and UCLA is a very good team. But like you mentioned, there is the SC factor as well.
The Cardinals, you buying in yet? Or are you still in the wait and see mode? 5-4, it's not unreasonable to use the playoff word around them. There's 7 games left, that there is positioning. They have beaten Detroit. They have beaten Carolina. So there's some tiebreakers in their favor too.
Yeah, and there's that other interesting thing that's happening with the 49ers, who, you know, a lot of people are second-guessing what's happening at quarterback there right now. So, you know, as far as battling for playoff spots and where they're going to be, and I think there's a lot of good things happening for the Cardinals. Have I bought in? Not yet. I think they've got to show me a little bit more consistency. I thought Palmer, you know, and obviously there was an interception, but Sunday I thought he made some of the best throws I've seen this season, you know, under pressure. Good judgment. He's got that, you know, rocket of an arm. And I thought that was maybe the most promising thing of all.
And, you know, he's gotten better the last few weeks. And so I still believe they have to draft a quarterback next April. I'm not going to sit here and say that they don't need quarterback help. But he has gotten better. And I don't see a running game still. Andre Roberts isn't really doing much. But Paula, guys like Rob Hausler finally showed something. And Michael Floyd has shown something. Steve Keim, I think, deserves a little bit of national attention for the Abraham and drafting Matthew. As this season has progressed, there's some national storylines starting to develop around this team.
No, and that's a great point, because, I've just been hearing it. I've been hearing it on national radio shows and you know, just following Twitter and what other people are writing about. And just, you know, you mentioned Matthew. You think of, one, some of the criticism they got for that pick, others celebrating it because they got him at a steal, you know, when they picked him and everything else. And I agree. I mean, I think they need to be applauded, certainly at the general manager position. And I think, you know, I think we're learning more about Bruce Arians, too. I think there were a lot of questions the first couple weeks of the season.
No question.
Right? I mean, I've heard people second-guessing the hiring and everything else. Yep. And I, you know, I don't know if it's players buying into him. I don't know if it's him finding his head coaching chops or whatever. But I even think that's sort of settled down a bit, and he's starting to show what he is as a coach. So they're a very intriguing storyline. And, you know, they've got a lot of tough games ahead, but I'm intrigued with what they're doing.
No, I mean, you can make the argument. Andy Reid has had he's had the most impact on his team. Obviously, they're undefeated. But if you were to go through the coaching hires and just do that angle of who hired whom in the offseason, that Bruce Arians would be right near the top of the list in terms of hires. They're beating some teams they shouldn't have beat. I'm not going to apologize for the Texans being bad. That's not Bruce Arians' fault.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing is the staff he put together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you look at the development of the offensive line, they're not obviously the best in the league, but, gosh, far better. Think of where they were at the end of last season. And then you look at the defense and sort of, you know, after what they lost defensively, losing a celebrated coach in that regard, and then having sort of this success with the defense for the most part. I think the staff he's put together has been really good, too, and I think that's sort of important when you're looking at evaluating a team overall.
Before I let you go, and I don't know if you have any answers on this or any thoughts on this, last week your publication did a terrific long-form series on high school sports in the state of Arizona, the have and the have-nots. Over the weekend, a high school football player at Hopi High School passed away. And it's going to be a subject that's talked about nationally, I do believe, because, once again, it's death on the football field. It's very unfortunate. I'm just curious the feedback you've gotten from going headlong into a high school story versus maybe doing the same old professional stuff.
You know what surprised me most, Brad, was you forget, because we get so caught up in the pros and colleges, how much high school sports still means to people. And there's so many of our readers out there and people who listen to you and read your website that have kids in high school. And it starts there, and then they kind of stick with it, or people who grow up in this area. And there's a very strong response with that series. And I think the eye-opening thing for me was how much people cared about it. You know, that was really intriguing.
Yeah, and when you say care about it, meaning lots and lots and lots of people read it.
Lots of people read it, and lots of people had strong feelings, whether it's about, you know, the transfer rule, because that was kind of part of it, to, you know, what has happened in the Phoenix Union District. Should you really be feeding high schoolers filet mignon before they go out on a football field? Do they merit that kind of treatment? I mean, there are some real questions, and I think one of the most I've got is people are really struggling with this idea that we are, one, making our kids play one sport all their young careers now, and that they're seeing, especially out in the East Valley, these kids are seeing personal trainers at a young age, and that's not something that's an option for many other people. And while it's just reality, there's definitely this feeling of unfairness out there.
And I'm one of those parents.
Me too.
I mean, I have a 9-year-old who's a big 9-year-old, and every Friday he meets with a personal trainer, and it's a group of boys that are 8 and 9, and they're pushing sleds, and they're learning agility because I see how big he is,
sure,
height-wise. And so I want to give him every opportunity. You're in that club world scene in basketball where you're probably paying a pretty fair penny for your son to become a better basketball player, to give him a shot at college. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just, how about the single mom with 4 kids who would do that, but they can't afford it, they don't have the resources to do it.
Right, I agree. And I think there just has to be ways found to help those who can't, whether it's, and I know that our club program that we're in is very sensitive to the financial needs, and if there's a single parent or whatever, they'll handle that. But there has to be more. I think there has to be, you know, some maybe kids who are, you know, the coaches in the Phoenix Union District were telling me they get football players as freshmen who never played the game.
Right.
And, you know, out near Trevor Brown, they don't have a Pop Warner League. Why don't they? You know, are there not ways to have other youth football leagues around that area? I don't know. But it's good at starting discussion, I guess, is my point.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist, joins us every week. The story up at Hopi High School is just heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking. And it's one of those deals where you look at it and say, okay, a high school football player died yesterday after he suffered a blow to the head during a game over the weekend. Hopi High School running back suffered a critical head injury Saturday night, Division 5 playoff game against Arizona Lutheran. Hopi High School, the Bruins, trailed 60-0 at the time of the injury. The young man had scored the team's only touchdown and on defense sacked the quarterback midway through the fourth quarter, caught a pass, taken down in what officials said appeared to be a typical tackle. His head hit the ground hard. He got right back up to his feet, 2 more plays, then he collapsed on the field. Conscious, talking, paramedics took him away. By the time he got to St. Joe's Hospital Medical Center, critical condition, remained that way through Monday. Family was by his bedside, passed away. Just like that. Second leading rusher on the Hopi team that had its best regular season record, 9-1 in school history. Absolutely devastating, I am sure, to the community. You can't put it into words. There's going to be a memorial service tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. at Hopi High School. And it's right here in our own backyard. High school kid does his thing, gets up. And look, I'm not going to turn this into the whole NFL thing, but we've been talking about concussions, brain injuries, head injuries, and all of that since we started doing this show a couple of years back because it's not been talked about enough. And this one just in our own backyard just breaks my heart. It absolutely breaks my heart. The young man's father is the athletic director at Hopi High School. The AD's son is the one that passed away.
It's a freak accident.
No,
you see it every now and again, Brad. And when I say every now and again, like every now and again in basketball, where a player will go up for a layup and get undercut, come down, broken neck. But the death is, I don't know if we've seen death. We've seen players being paralyzed, but.
I'm right in the middle of this deal, okay? It's not even going to come close to this, obviously. I'm at my daughter's club soccer game. She's a senior in high school. She's getting recruited. I'm talking to colleges and all that stuff. Saturday night, she's been concussed 3 times.
No, and it happens a lot more than people realize in soccer.
And I'm right there on the edge of saying, you're done. We had this discussion yesterday before hearing this. She and I had this very straightforward, where are you at? Because I don't like seeing you go up for headers and getting an elbow to the head and then coming down. Because she did that on Saturday night. And I'm right there watching it. So, I mean, I'm just sick over this story. Hopi High School right here. Our thoughts and prayers to the community there at Hopi High School. Really tough stuff right here in our own state. I'm Brad Sussmat. We continue on sports360az.com. White Mountain Radio, the good people on White Mountain Radio, thanks for joining us. All right, this Sports Tuesday edition of the Brad Sussmat Show on White Mountain Radio. Sports360AZ.com. Hope you're having yourself a great week. The Suns, I'll get to them in a minute. The Suns and Jeff Hornacek. And Dwayne Bowe, probably the dumbest guy on the planet today. And I'll explain, though, the Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver. I'll explain that in a minute. This segment of the Brad Sussmat Show is brought to you by Santan Ford, where it's all about you. General Manager Tim Hovick and I were exchanging some emails yesterday about the weekend it was and things that I'm working on, and very supportive. That's what I like about the people at Santan Ford. We were out there this last week, Eric and Jared, Kyle, myself. We were out there to do some interviews and have a good time at Santan Ford. The people, very friendly. I saw some deals being cut, some deals being made. Win-win situation. If you're looking for that car or that truck, the F-150, I think, guys, for Thanksgiving, just a couple weeks away. Do you know what you're driving for Thanksgiving? You know, when you make that trip up to your cabin in the mountains or to the West Coast or to load up the kids, you comfortable in that truck? You know, snow season's going to be here before you know it. How about the F-150? It could be the Fusion Hybrid, which has made a huge difference in my gas bill, a huge difference in my wallet, the Fusion Hybrid from Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Santan 202 and Higley in Gilbert. That's at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it's all about you. Dwayne Bowe. There's guys that come along in sports. I mean, look, the Cardinals beating Houston obviously is the big story in the state of Arizona. Kansas City Chiefs are undefeated. That's the biggest story in the National Football League. Chiefs have a week off. What was it, Eric, that Bruce Arians said to the players before they left? Don't end up on TMZ, was it, or something like
that? Don't end up getting tased in South Beach.
In South Beach, right. So here's Dwayne Bowe, one of the top wide receivers in the National Football League. I think most every NFL fan is anticipating this Sunday night's game between the undefeated Chiefs and Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. This game should do enormous ratings. It will tell a lot about the AFC West. Even if you're not a fan of either team, it's still very intriguing when a team is undefeated. Will Peyton Manning take them down, especially Peyton having the knee injury? So you're Dwayne Bowe, a guy that's worked out with Larry Fitzgerald, a guy that's viewed one of the top receivers. So what does Dwayne Bowe do on Sunday night? Well, I'll read you the police report. Shortly before midnight on November 10th, a Riverside police officer, this is in Kansas City, was parked on West Platte Road in Northwest Business Park using his radar check for speed violators. A guy in a 2011 Audi A8 registered a speed of 48 and a 35. Okay. Eric, have you done 48 and a 35?
I think sure.
I've done 48 and a 35.
Sure.
Police officer in a marked car stopped the car. West Platte Road at Riverside Street. While questioning the driver, the officer detected a strong odor of marijuana from inside the vehicle. Never been in a car that's had a strong odor of marijuana, but I've done 48 and a 35. The officer then requested the driver and two passengers to get out of the vehicle. Once out of the car, officer explained to the driver who owned the vehicle that he had a canine officer and that the dog would alert to an illegal substance. Subsequently, inside a black bag, the officer discovered the wallet of the driver and the vehicle owner, Dwayne Bowe. Dwayne L. Bowe had two containers that had 6.6 grams and 3.8 grams, respectively, of what is believed to be marijuana in them. Having never done marijuana, believe it or not, I'm an athlete, been an athlete, never done it. I don't know if that's a lot. Is that a lot, Eric? Do you know?
I've never smoked it either.
Yeah.
But
6.6 grams, 3.8 grams.
I would guess that's a pretty good chunk.
All right. Bowe was then placed under arrest for possession of a controlled substance. Canine alerted to a black backpack. Inside it, he found a container that had 4.2 grams of what it believed to be marijuana in it. What do you know? 6.6 grams plus 3.8 grams plus 4.2 grams. Sounds like he's packing a lot of grams. One of the passengers said the backpack belonged to him subsequent to his arrest for possession of a controlled substance. This guy, George Thompson, who was in Bowe's car, searched and on his person, two hand-rolled cigarettes containing what was believed to be 2.2 grams of marijuana. Okay, let's do the math here. So we have 6.6 plus 3.8 plus 4.2 plus 2.2. This sounds like one of those math classes that you're in, that the number starts to grow.
That's about 16.
Bowe and Thompson both transported to the Riverside Police Department for booking on the following municipal charges: speeding, possession of controlled substance, bond of $750. His friend, possession of a controlled substance, at least the guy said it's mine, didn't lay it out on Dwayne Bowe. That's typically what happens in these things when guys are just beyond stupid.
And it could be a lot worse. I mean, I'm not certainly making or sticking up for Dwayne Bowe, but it wasn't like it was crack, or it wasn't like he was caught with a prostitute, Eric, or something like that.
See, I disagree with you.
It's just marijuana.
Eric, both men release court date December 18th. They're having an undefeated season. Why do you put yourself in that position? And I'm sure there's people that say the same thing as you. He did 48 and a 35, which we've all done. Says, Matt, I carry marijuana around with me. It's not that big of a deal. No, you're supposed to be. You're one of the leaders on the team. You're 9-0. You're in terrific position. Now, what do you do if you're the Kansas City Chiefs? Do you play Dwayne Bowe this week? What if you're the National Football League? Dwayne Bowe is a very important piece to this team.
It has a great trickle-down effect, doesn't it?
If you're the fourth wide receiver, I'm not even doing this story. You're a Pro Bowl wide receiver and supposedly one of the leaders on a team that has not lost a game. You're supposed to be the guy that says, hey, any of you have any Mary Jane with you? Because if you do, we're not doing that right now. The 48 and the 35, that happens. He got pulled over. What doesn't happen to most of us is we don't have marijuana all over us, not just once, not just twice, not just three, but four places in the car.
They've got a pretty big game on Sunday.
Really big
game. Pretty big game. They're playing the Broncos and Broncos their quarterback, Chiefs. Who I heard is pretty good.
Yeah. So now you're Andy Reid. And as of yet, I haven't seen what's going to happen to Dwayne Bowe. Does Dwayne Bowe just roll on it? Maybe using the word roll is wrong in this case because he's already been rolling something. Does Dwayne Bowe just show up? Hey, I got pulled over. It was a misunderstanding. Not a big deal. It's only the biggest game this year in the entire National Football League. I should be able to play. If you're Andy Reid, do you say it's not fair to all the guys that are working alongside of Dwayne Bowe for me to suspend him? He's a big part of our team. Winning football games is the first priority. That's what it's all about. Well, no, that's not going to play well with moms and dads whose kids have Dwayne Bowe in a poster lined up in their room. So does he play, or does owner and management suspend him? Which to me, it's like how the Cardinals have handled some things here recently. It was a D.C. Jefferson got arrested for being a dumbass in Scottsdale, so they ended up cutting him. Okay, I understand it wasn't one of their star players, but it's still a player. They blew him out. Darrell Washington, you're done. Sit down. What does Kansas City do with, I'd say, one of the top 10 wide receivers, top 15 wide receivers in the entire National Football League for this Sunday night's huge game, undefeated Kansas City against Denver? Guy gets pulled over, four different spots, a pot on him. Suspend him or not? Can't make this stuff up. The Bears fans want Josh McCown over Jay Cutler. Maybe they were having some of that same marijuana. They're not going to win a playoff game with Josh McCown instead of Jay Cutler. Brad Sussmad with you. Sports360AZ.com. That's where our website is. Great content all around Arizona. Sports360AZ.com. On White Mountain Radio, the good people of White Mountain Radio. And on Twitter, my handle is @BradSussmat, C-E-S-M-A-T.